7, Stan Phillips.
Mansions of glory and suicide machines sprung from cages on highway nine, torn with human ticket and stepping out over the line. Good morning, Met fans. How is the new year treating you? Well, where did we leave off? Our last podcast, we talked about everything that happened in 2022. And now we really need to start focusing on what's happening in 2023. The biggest concern in Metland is Carlos Correa. Where will the latest talks with Carlos end up? Now, they're expected to pick up again soon. Now, the holidays are over, and Carlos Correa still doesn't have a contract with a new team. But will that new team be the Mets? After a lull through New Year's Day, though, talks are expected to pick up again, and there is still belief there's a good chance Correa ends up with the Mets, despite the team's concerns over a surgically repaired ankle. Still, other teams at least touched base with Correa's agent, Scott Boras, including the first team that thought it had a deal for Correa this offseason, the Giants. Now, San Francisco's president of baseball operations, Farhin Zahidi, told reporters on Friday the Giants are among the teams to follow up with Correa's camp. Zahidi said, "But our understanding, and it's been reported, they're focused on a deal somewhere else at this point. So I think the chance of a deal with us at this point are pretty unlikely based on their position." So what does that mean, folks? It means the fact that the Mets must be active and still in the driver's seat for Carlos Correa. Now, Correa and the Giants had agreed on a 13-year, $350 million deal before the Giants called it off, which led to Mets owner Steve Cohen greenlighting a 12-year, $315 million contract. The Mets, though, ended up having some concerns of their own regarding the injury that stemmed from Correa having gone under arthroscopic surgery in 2014 to repair a fractured fibula and minor ligament damage. Now, Carlos suffered the injury sliding into a base in the minor leagues and had a metal plate inserted to help stabilize his right leg. The 28-year-old Correa has missed 42 games over the past three seasons, none for anything related to his past ankle injury. He did have an issue with the injury in September while with the Twins, when Correa got tagged on the area in his lower leg where he has the plate. Correa told reporters it felt numb and vibrating. Dr. Brandon Erickson, an orthopedic surgeon at Rothman Orthopedic Institute who has not examined Correa, told the Post Greg Joyce last week that was not unusual. So we shall see what happens. My gut feeling is we will see Carlos Correa at third base for the Mets on opening day. But as we know with sports, and especially baseball, you just never know. But stay tuned, folks. It should be interesting. Now, one Met that I wish the Mets had kept all these years was David Cohn. They did get him back in 2003. But let's focus on his career with the Mets from 1987 to 1992. And as I mentioned, 2003. Cohn was a favorite of mine. His full name, David Brian Cohn, and he was born in Kansas City, Missouri. And how apropos, he grew up a Royals fan, and his idol was Royals 1970s pitcher Dennis Leonard. Who remembers Dennis Leonard, one of the more underrated pitchers of his era? Leonard was good. Now, the 6'1" right-handed Cohn was selected in the third round of the 81 draft by his hometown Royals. In 1982, he got off to a great professional start when he won 16 games, 16-3 with a 2.08 ERA between Fort Myers and Charleston. He posted losing records the next two seasons, going 8-4 at AAA Omaha in 86. Now, Cohn was brought up to the big leagues in 86, making 11 brief relief appearances for the Royals. And just as spring training was ending in 1987, he was traded along with Chris Jellick to the Mets for Ed Hearn, Rick Anderson, and Mauro Guzzo, one of the best trades in Met history. The Royals and their fans have said, and even the Royals owners come on the books as saying, it was the worst trade in the team's history. Now, Cohn debuted for the Mets without much fanfare, pitching in the fourth game of the season in relief of Rick Aguilera in a loss to the Atlanta Braves. Cohn allowed a ninth-inning RBI base hit to Ken Griffey, earning the loss. He pitched three more relief appearances in April, getting credit for two holds. In his first start, he gave up three runs in a no decision to the Expos in a Mets loss. On May 12th, Cone won his first game with a two-run, four-hit complete game win in Cincinnati. He followed that up with a win over the Giants at Shea. After two more starts, he was sent back to AAA Tidewater until late August. In his return, he finished off a loss at Wrigley Field. On August 20th, Cone got a relief win at home over the Giants, pitching four shutout innings. Now, the 1987 Mets had been chasing the Cardinals most of the year. In September, they got to within one-half games but could never defend their title. Ron Darling was the only starter to not miss time in the rotation. If you recall, it was a rough year for the Mets starters. Darling won 12 games. Sid, El Cid from Hawaii, Hawaii 5-0, number 50, was also a mainstay with 28 starts and 12 wins as well. Bobby O, he was only limited to just 7 starts. And of course, our good friend Dwight Gooden missed time at the start of the season for drug rehab. Rick Aguilera, who went on to a great, great career, made 18 starts, going an impressive 11-3. So Cone was a nice addition and needed to fill the holes. On September 13th, Cone had an impressive win over Danny Cox, beating the Cardinals at Chase Stadium, avoiding a series sweep and keeping them 2.5 games back. The Mets had a 4-game win streak to stay at 1.5 games back for the next week before falling out of the race. The Mets finished second with 92 games, one being a record of 92-70. Now, Coney dropped three straight decisions from September 17th to September 29th, finished the year with a relief appearance in St. Louis against the NL East champion Cards. For the year, Cone's numbers weren't pretty good. He was 5-6 with 68 strikeouts and 44 walks in 99.1 innings pitch, posting a 3.71 ERA with one save. He made 21 appearances with 13 saves. Now, Cone really began to take off in 1988, an NL East championship season for the Metropolitans. He started out the first month in a bullpen, earning two victories thanks to late-inning Met rallies. He was also credited with one hold. Injuries again to the starting staff forced him to fill the rotation spots where he excelled. On May 3rd, he made his first start. He would shut out the Atlanta Braves with a complete game at Chase Stadium, striking out 5 batters, scattering 8 hits. From there, the Mets went on a long West Coast road trip. Cone picked up 3 straight wins with victories at Houston, LA, and San Diego. In those 3 games, he allowed just 2 earned runs and 21 innings work. And he won the NL Pitcher of the Month award for Mays. He went 5-0, allowing only 3 runs and 37 innings of work with 34 strikeouts. On June 2nd, he had a 1-run, 10-inning performance against the Cubs, although he earned a no decision in a 2-1 win where Howard Johnson hit a walk-off homer. It wasn't until June 7th when he gained his first loss, which was his 14th appearance of the year. On June 19th, Cone pitched a 2-hit shutout against Philadelphia, striking out 7 Phillies in a 6-0 Shea win. By now, Cone was earning the reputation as another Mets star pitcher. By the All-Star break, the surprising Cone was 9-2 with a 2.50 ERA. In 1998, he was an All-Star. 88. Did I say 98? I meant 88. He was named to his first All-Star squad, joining teammates Dwight Gooden, Gary Carter, and Darryl Strawberry at the Midsummer Classic in Cincinnati. Cone even pitched a scoreless 5th inning, striking out Paul Molitor in a 2-1 AL win. And how about the Coneheads? Back at home, the Shea faithful were always known to be creative and began a fan club for Cone on days he pitched, calling themselves the Coneheads. They would appear in the stands at Shea just as the K corner was seen on days when Dwight Gooden pitched. Now, on June 22nd, he won his first game after the break, beating the Braves at Shea Stadium, allowing just 1 run on 6 hits, while fanning 7 in a complete game win. He would win 3 straight decisions. On August 2nd, he beat the Chicago Cubs, throwing another complete game, 1-run performance, where he struck out 9. In mid-August, Cone had consecutive starts where he struck out 12 batters in each game. He was bringing it. The first came against the Expos, and the second came against the Giants on the road. After losing that game, he went on to win his last 8 starts of the year. Now get this, from July 10th through the rest of the regular season, Cone went 11-1 with an incredible stretch of winning his last 8 in a row, helping the Mets to capture the Eastern title. In his final 2 months of the season, David struck out 10 or more batters in the game 5 different times. Now on August 29th, Cone pitched a gem at Chase Stadium, a 1-hitter against the Padres. The only hit came in the fourth inning, a double off the bat of batting champ Tony Gwynn. Go figure. Of course Gwynn got the hit, right? It was a 17-1 hitter in Met history, the first since 1985. In 88, Cone had great control of his pitches, having possibly his best season. He used a cut fastball, nasty slider, curve changeup, and lethal split finger, which he used as his out pitch. Cone went on to lead the NL in winning percentage with .870 as he went 20-3, which was the third most wins in the league, with a 2.22 ERA, second best in the NL, 213 strikeouts, again second best in the NL, and 231 innings pitched. Cone came in third in the Cy Young voting award, as well as top 10 in the league's MVP voting. Cone was doing it all, and beyond his 20 victories, he also had two games where he pitched 10 innings, allowing only one run, but got a no decision. Now, in 1988, the Mets won the NL East title, and Cone covered the Mets for a local paper during the postseason. There was some controversy, because after the Mets' Game 1 victory over the LA Dodgers, Cone stated in his column that Dodger ace Oral Hershiser was lucky to get as far as the eighth inning of that game. He also blasted Dodger reliever Jay Howell, calling him a high school pitcher, because he threw curveball after curveball. Dodgers used his bulletin board material and went on to beat Cone, knocking him out after just two innings, allowing five earned runs in Game 2. Now, Cone returned to beat Tim Leary in Game 6. Remember Tim Leary? Big Met prospect back in the day. And Cone pitched a complete game, one run, five hitter, sending the NL East Championship Series to a Game 7. The Mets were shut out 6-0 behind Oral Hershiser, who allowed just five hits along the way, advancing LA to the World Series in an eventual upset over the Oakland A's. A miracle year for the Dodgers indeed. But what a year it was for Coney in 1988. Now let's look at 1989. Cone took a loss in his first start, then won his next two decisions. On April 25th, he pitched into the ninth inning, beating Zane Smith and the Atlanta Braves 2-1. He won his third game on May 6th, beating Jim Clancy and the Astros in a one-run, five-hitter, but took another 6 weeks, which was seven starts and a relief appearance, for earning another win. On July 21st, he shut out the Expos for seven innings and a 2-0 win. From there, Coney took off and won eight straight decisions, going a perfect 4-0 in July. On July 30, he beat the Astros with a five-hitter at the Astrodome, beating Jim DeShays 3-1. When the Astros came to Shea on July 19th, Cone then threw a four-hit, two-run victory, striking out eight in a 6-2 win. On August 8th, he shut out the Phillies at the Vet, allowing just six hits in a 9-0 win. Then he beat the Cardinals, allowing just a run over eight innings. On August 18th, Cone won a 3-2 game over Oral Hershiser and the Dodgers at Shea. A little payback from 88, maybe. Hojo and Darryl Johnson drove in runs, but the difference was Hershiser's wild pitch that scored Kevin McReynolds in the sixth inning. On April 29th, he won a 2-1 thriller over John Wetland and Dodgers, this time in Dodger Stadium. On August 4th, Cone struck out a season-high 11 Cubs, but allowed five runs, and he took a loss, which was kind of crucial at the time, a 7-3 loss. At the end of the day, the Mets fell to 4.5 games behind the Cubs, with the Cardinals and Expos also ahead of the Mets. Now, in his last outing of the year with the Mets, now out of the race, Cone had a fine close to his year. He pitched a three-hit shutout against the Pirates in Pittsburgh, where he struck out 10. So from late June through the end of the year, he was 11-4, helping the Mets fight for the pennant, although they would lose out to the Eastern Division champion Cubs. He went 14-8 on the 89 season, posting a 3.52 ERA, striking out 190 batters, which was fourth in the league, pitching in 219 innings. His strikeout per nine innings ratio again was fourth best in the NL, 7.78, and he tossed two shutouts with seven complete games while walking 74 batters. So Cone came up with another good year, and at the plate, he had a big stick. He batted .234 with two doubles and four RBIs. Cone drove in four runs or more for the next four seasons, so Cone was no slouch at the plate at all. In 1990, the season started with Cone not getting his first hit until mid-May, though he had recorded seven more strikeouts in five of six starts. On July 4th, he struck out 12 batters, and was the first of four times he struck out that many. On June 9th, he won the first of six straight decisions. On June 19th, Cone pitched a four-hit shutout, beating the Cards 6-0 at Shea Stadium. A 3-2 win over John Tudor in St. Louis followed them on June 30th, And although he earned a no decision, he started a four-game stretch where he would reach double figures in strikeouts. Now, after three more consecutive wins, he won a 1-0 game to Joe McGrane, with Willie McGlee's home run being the difference. In August, he pitched into the seventh inning or beyond four or five times. He went 3-2 that month, besting his record to 10-7. On August 18th, he struck out a season-high 13 batters in a complete game 9-2 win in San Francisco over the reigning NL champion, Giants. It was the seventh time he reached double figures in strikeouts that season, and he would do it two more times. In September, he struck out 12 batters in two separate games, going 4-3 in the month. On September 26th, he threw a two-hit, eight-inning shutout in Montreal with Larry Walker collecting both hits. Cone struck out seven with four walks. In his final start, he went the distance, giving up one run on just three hits to the Pirates, striking out 12 to reach double K figures for the ninth time of the year. That year, the Mets again finished second, this time against the Pirates, who were four games ahead of them. Now, Cone would go on to lead the NL in strikeouts the first of two straight seasons, posting 233 Ks for 1990. He went 14-10 with a 3.23 ERA while tossing six complete games. He was third behind Frank Viola's 20 wins and Dwight Gooden's 19 wins on the staff. He made 30 starts, pitching in 211 and two-thirds innings while walking 65 batters. And in 1991, after seven winning seasons where the Mets never finished lower than second place, 91 began a downswing of six straight losing seasons. Yes, things were not looking good at Flushing by the Bay. Cone fell off to a 500 season with a 14-14 record as the team finished in fifth place. 77-84, the managers Bud Harrelson and Mike Kovich. He began with a 2-0 start with wins on the road in Pittsburgh and Montreal. On May 3rd, he shut out the Giants for eight innings, striking out nine, allowing no walks and just four hits for his third win. After two straight losses, he pitched a complete game over the Cards where he struck out 12 and then had a one-run, 8-1 Mets win at Wrigley Field in Chicago. On June 4th, he gave up two runs unearned in a win at Riverfront Stadium over the Reds. On June 9th, he lost a 1-0 game in Houston, getting beat by Pete Harnisch, who ended up being a future Met. His next decision, was a no decision against the Astros, where he had just one run, eight innings. In his last four starts, he had just allowed three earned runs in 35 innings, 12 over his ERA to 2.64. On July 13th, he struck out 13 batters in a 3-win over the San Diego Padres at Chase Stadium to get himself to a 9-5 record at the All-Star break with a 2.66 ERA. On July 29th, he pitched a three-hitter in L.A., beating the Dodgers 5-1 with seven strikeouts, walking just one. Unfortunately, he then lost three decisions. In back-to-back losses to the Cubs, he allowed 11 runs in just six innings, first giving up six runs in two innings at Shea, then allowing five runs in four innings at Wrigley Field. On August 30th in Game Riverfront Stadium, against the Reds, he threw nine pitches and struck out the side in a 3-2 Mets win. The game, he would go on to strike out nine batters to earn his 12th win. On the next to last day of the season, unfortunately, a New Jersey woman accused Cone of raping her in a Philadelphia Hilton Towers hotel room back in September. The controversy surrounded him and tarnished his image. The charges were eventually dropped. The next day, on the last day of the 1991 regular season, he had an incredible outing in Philadelphia to beat the Phillies. Cone went into the record books, tying an old NL record held by two Hall of Famers, Mets' Tom Seaver and Philadelphia's Steve Carlton, when he struck out 19 batters in a game. Cone had four innings where he struck out all three outs by strikeouts. Shortstop Kim Batiste got the golden sombrero by striking out four times. Wes Chamberlain and Doug Lindsey both struck out three times each. Cone pitched a three-out shutout that day, walking just one batter. He joked that the only place he felt safe where the Philadelphia PD couldn't get him was on the pitcher's mound. And the strikeouts continued in 91 for Cone. He struck out 241 batters, leading the NL for the second straight year, while also posting the league's best strikeout per nine-inning ratio, 9.3, for the second straight year as well. He pitched a career high up to that point, 232 innings, fifth in the NL, walking 73 batters while making 34 starts. Cone posted a 3.29 ERA, pitching two shutouts and five complete games. During spring training 92, he was accused of another rape scandal, which also included teammates Al Boston and Vince Coleman. Some reports said that Conan had been dating the woman at the time and they were involved in menage a trois. That news was upsetting to his new fiance. Eventually, the charges were dropped. Later that year, drama continued while three men accused him of exposing himself to them and masturbating to them while in the Shea Stadium bullpen. Through all these accusations, he was surrounded by this drama. Fans would make gestures at him. Newspapers ran comics poking fun at him. He received obscene phone calls and sexual and threatening letters. He even appeared on Howard Stern's K-Rock show and 66 WNBC Don Imus radio shows, taking some comedy abuse pointed at him. Now, on the mound, he started opening day in St. Louis, earning a no decision, allowing 2 runs in 8 innings against the Cardinals. On April 11th, he allowed 4 runs to the Expos in Montreal for returning back home to get his first win on April 17th, which also came against the Expos. Now, on April 28th, he tossed a 2-hit shutout over the Houston Astros at Shea Stadium, the only hits from Jeff Bagwell and pitch hitter Benny DiStefano. Coney struck out 11 batters, walking no one. In his next start, he threw a 5-hit shutout against the Braves, and after a loss, he went on a great streak, first pitching back-to-back shutouts in San Diego and San Francisco on the California road trip. From June 16th through August 2nd, Cone would win 8 straight decisions. As you can see the pattern here, when Cone got hot, he got hot. He would strike out 10 or more batters in 5 games and throw 2 complete victories. At the end of the first half, he was 9-2 with a 2.35 ERA with 154 strikeouts. And 6 games with double Ks, with figures in double Ks during that stretch. He made his second All-Star appearance representing the Mets as the team's sole representative at San Diego's Jack Murphy Stadium. Cone pitched a fourth inning in the All-Star game, striking out the Chicken Man, Wade Boggs. The NL lost to the AL 13-6. By late August, the Mets were in fifth place and just pretty dismal for the year, and were 15 games back at the NL East. As for Cone, he was pitching well enough to be 13-7 with a 2.88 ERA. He was on his way to a career-high 261 strikeout season. Though he was leading the NL in walks, 82, and it was only the end of August, but the organization wasn't happy with the ongoing sexual accusations and all bad press that surrounded him. Finally, they had enough. On August 27th, Cone was traded to Toronto Blue Jays for Jeff Kent and Ryan Thompson. Now, that would have been one hell of a deal for the Mets if they had held on to Jeff Kent, but we all know what happened there. Now, wrapping up his career and his Mets career, David Cone was 81-51, ninth most wins in Met history. Struck out 1,172 batters, sixth on the all-time list for the Mets, and walked 431 batters in 1209 innings of work, 11th on the all-time list. He posted a 3.13 ERA, 9th on the Mets' all-time list, making 169 starts, 12th on the Mets' all-time list. He had 15 shutouts, 5th on the Mets' all-time list, with 34 complete games, 7th on the Mets' all-time list. Now, post-career, he went 4-3 the rest of the way with Toronto and went on to win his first World Championship with the Blue Jays. In the 1992 postseason, the ALCS against the A's, went 1-1, taking the victory in Game 2 at Sky Dome. He allowed just 1 run over 5 hits in 8 innings of work. In the World Series, he earned 2 no decisions against the Braves. In Game 2 at Atlanta, he allowed 3 runs over 5 innings in the 5-4 losses he faced off against John Smoltz. Game 5, Cone allowed just 1 run over 6 innings, then exited the game winning extra innings. The Jays won in the top of the 11th on a Dave Winfield 2-run double. This was the first start of Cone's new reputation, becoming a big-game postseason pitcher. Although he never dominated again as he did in his first season with the Mets, he would become a hired gun, helping to boast pitching staffs in the heat of a pennant race. In the next season, he found his way back to Kansas City, with the Royals winning the 94 Cy Young Award when he went 16-5 with a 2.94 ERA, which was third in the AL, pitched 3 shutouts and posted a .762 winning percentage, fifth in the AL, playing in his 3rd of 5 career All-Star games. Before the 95 season, he was traded to Toronto for 2 minor leaguers, At the end of July, he was traded to the Yankees for three minor leaguers. Overall, he won 18 games between the two teams and found new life in the twilight of his career. Cone would have another 21 season with the Yankees and win four World Series titles and throw a perfect game before it was all over in 2003. He had quite a career. And he was brought back to the Mets in 2003 for nostalgic reasons, but was clearly washed up as he went 1-3, appearing in five games, posting a 6.50 ERA. In his 17-year career, Cone won 194 games, 135th in the win total all time for Major League Baseball, and lost 126 games. He struck out 2,668 batters, 27th all time, with 1,136 walks, 37 walks, I should say, 66 most all time, 56 complete games, 22 shutouts, and a 3.46 ERA in 450 games pitched with 419 starts. He threw 149 wild pitches, 38th most all time, hit 106 batters, 71st all time, and while 258 homers, 107th all time, and 115 earned runs, 178th all time, in 2,898 innings, which was 152nd all time in 450 games. Now, after his playing days, the Mets offered him a broadcasting job, but chose to stay home with his family. He later took a job at the YES Network, broadcasting games for the AL New York team. And to this day, he still does, and he's also on the ESPN broadcast on Sunday night. Now, Cone did marry Lynn DiGioia in 1994, and they have a son. They divorced in 2011. He later had a long romance with Taja Abatol, who he met at an Upper West Side restaurant in 2007. They broke up in 2022. Now, Cone attended the Mets 2022 Old Timers Day at Citi Field, and by golly, it was fun to see him. I always say David Cone does not get the respect he does as a Met. He was one of the best Met pitchers of all time. Okay, it's that time of the podcast where we reveal what the Met trivia question of the day is and the Met Jeopardy, Final Jeopardy is. Who is ready? You got your pens and paper ready? Okay, today's trivia question. What Met player in his first at-bat against his former franchise hit a grand slam off Giants ace Gaylord Perry on his way to a career-high six home runs in his first season as a Met? And today's Final Jeopardy, two clues as always. First clue, on August 17, 2008, was traded to New York Mets for a player renamed later. Had requested the trade weeks earlier because he wanted a change of scenery, but due to personal problems, the Mets sent Anderson Hernandez to Nats to complete the deal. In 19 games for the Mets, he had a 5.50 ERA. We'll be back in a bit to give you the answers, as we always do to conclude the podcast. But for now, let's delve into Met birthdays, etc., as we always do at this point. On this day, on January 3rd in Met history, four Mets were born. First one was John Sullivan, born 1941. John was a catcher for the Mets who wore number 20 in 1967. Second batter, or player born on January 3rd, and he was a batter, is Jim Dwyer, wore number 25 with the Mets. He was a good pinch hitter, especially with the Orioles in the early 80s to mid-80s. He wore number 25 with the Mets. Only got into 11 games with the Mets with 13 at-bats in 1976. But once a Met, always a Met. Happy birthday, Jim Dwyer. And happy birthday to Luis Rivera, who was a shortstop and second baseman who wore number 3 for the Mets in 1994. And he appeared in 32 games with 43 at-bats for the Mets in 94. Also on this date, Mark Dewey was born. Mark pitched for the Mets in 1992, appearing in 20 games, starting none, so all his appearances were in relief, obviously, and he had a 4.32 ERA, wore number 43 with the Mets. Happy birthday to Mark Dewey. And on this date in 2000, January 3rd, Mets released Bobby Boe, who still lives in infamy due to his contract. The man is still getting paid. And on this date in 2001, the Mets signed Jim Mann at the Mets as a free agent. And on this date in 2003, the Texas Rangers signed John Thompson at the Mets as a free agent. And on this date, on January 3rd, 2011, one of the more rubber-armed Met pitchers we've ever had, Pedro Feliciano, was signed by the New York Yankees. And on this date in 2011, the Mets signed free agent Taylor Buchholz of the Toronto Blue Jays. And finally, on this date, the Mets signed free agent Chris Capuano of the Milwaukee Braves on this date. So there you have it. Those are our Mets birthdays and transactions for today. And now, as we always do, we're going to give you the answers to our final Jeopardy and trivia question. Once again, the trivia question was, what Met player in his first at-bat against his former franchise hit a grand slam off Giant ace Gaylord Perry on his way to a career-high 6 home runs his first season as a Met? Well, the correct answer is Dave Marshall. And our Jeopardy had two clues. On August 17, 2008, was traded to New York Mets for a player to be named later. Had requested the trade weeks earlier because he had a change of scenery, because he wanted to change of scenery due to personal problems. The Mets sent Anderson Hernandez to the Nats to complete the deal. And in 19 games for the Mets, he had a 5.50 ERA. Well, the correct answer is Luis Ayala. And congrats to Jason Lynch, one of the most knowledgeable Met fans in our group. And let me mention a group, shameless plug, it's New York Mets Baseball Way of Life on Facebook. If you're not a member, please feel free to join. He got it right. Congrats, Jason. So that's going to wrap up our today's podcast, and we will be back at you tomorrow with another one. So enjoy the weather, and just remember, only 86 days till opening day. Take care and talk to you soon.
Thank you.